Welcome to Legal Lens, a DebtWire podcast on legal issues impacting restructuring and the distressed industry at large. My name is Andy Serby. Today, I'm glad to be joined by Kevin Clancy of Cohn Resnick. He's a global director in the firm's restructuring and dispute resolution practice, and he generally provides financial advisory and litigation support services centered on bankruptcy, debt restructuring, investigations, and forensic accounting. He's worked on cases that include Enron, WorldCom, Yellowstone, and many more. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Andy, thanks for having me.
We're here to talk about the situation facing restaurants as they try to move through restructuring, as we've seen kind of a bump in them this year. But first, I want to start with you. So can you tell us a little bit about your personal background and kind of how you came to this firm doing this work?
I started, believe it or not, with Cohn Resnick back in 1999. So I've been doing this a long time. It's unusual to be at the same firm for that length of time. I kind of stumbled into the bankruptcy restructuring work. Never took a class in undergrad or law school in it, but in the late 90s, things were heating up, you know, as we got into the dot-com days, and it was an interesting path to take. And our group joined Cohn Resnick when I think we had 400 people in the firm, and now we have 5,000. So it's a great place to grow and grow your career, and got a great team around me.
Absolutely. I think that there are so few people who kind of get into restructuring because they see themselves there when they're younger. It seems like everybody has some sort of story of, I just kind of found my way here. And that's so interesting to me.
Not unusual at all. I've heard the same stories throughout my career at the same time. Circumstances present themselves and next thing you know, they're doing restructuring as a career.
Jumping into the restaurants topic, I want to first start with kind of the key issues facing them. A couple of the ones that we see a lot cited in court documents are things like rising labor and operating expense difficulties. Can you tell us a little bit about your view on that?
Sure. And I think you have to go a little bit further back and kind of look to how we got to where we are right now. Obviously, during the pandemic, restaurants were impacted to a great degree. And I think as people came out of the pandemic, there was this euphoria to get back out. And in-person dining was one of those paths that people were taking. And certainly costs, as we all know, have continued to go up, both labor as well as for food and so forth. And I think we have now found ourselves in a situation where that euphoria is over. And now both consumers as well as the restaurant operators are reevaluating their operations. And certainly in certain states, you have minimum wage has gone up quite a bit. And as consumers, you always have to look at things from the consumer's perspective. They have a certain amount of dollars to spend on a monthly basis to eat and for food. How do you divide that spend between dining out and having food at home? And I think as the price pressures have really developed over the last couple of years, people are pulling back from the number of times that they're going out to dine and instead, you know, buying food at the supermarket and staying home. And that has created a fall off, obviously, in the foot traffic and therefore the revenues that a lot of these restaurants have been enjoying coming out of the pandemic.
Right. It still very much feels like everyone's searching for the right equilibrium because, like you said, people have a certain amount of dollars to spend out there and restaurants have to kind of make things up from the pandemic. And we've seen lots of discussion about, you know, what it costs to eat at a place even like McDonald's or something like that. And I think they just announced that they were going to lower their prices or not raise them, which is interesting. We've kind of touched on the pandemic thing here. And if you read court documents for like first days, pretty much everyone still mentions it, whether it's post-stimulus, inflationary pressure, supply chain things. To what extent do you think we are still feeling the COVID effects in this industry versus maybe some downstream stuff, or maybe it's just kind of become a boilerplate point for anyone who's restructuring?
I think there's a few hangover items coming out of the pandemic, and we've all experienced this when we started going back out and dining in restaurants. You would see the help wanted signs up pretty much everywhere, and you'd walk into your favorite establishment, and there'd be lots of open tables. But there'd be an hour wait. And you'd kind of say, well, why is there a wait when you've got these open tables? It's just the lack of people to staff the restaurants. There was a mass migration, not surprisingly, of restaurant workers who had to find other career paths during COVID. And many of them did not come back into the hospitality space. So not only do you have finding people to staff your restaurants, but you had a great fall off of people who were trained and worked in that space for many, many years. So it's kind of twofold. It's the headcount of looking for employees, and then you also had a lot of individuals who were trained and spent a good deal of time working in the restaurant arena who are no longer there. And I think the other fall off or hangover from COVID is the footprint of your restaurant locations. As we all know, people are still to a great degree working from home. There's some mandatory, you know, be in the office a certain number of days. But you think about a traditional office park, or even looking at a big city like New York, how many dining establishments really rely upon the foot traffic on a Monday through Friday type of calendar? And that's not only people grabbing breakfast or lunch or dinner, but it's also catering to these businesses, whether they're having in-office work meetings where they're bringing in food, or you're having client meetings where you're ordering food. So looking at where your locations are and how they've been affected by the work from home is something that a lot of restaurants are going through right now to figure out the strategy that worked pre-pandemic. We're in a different world now that we're on, hopefully, this side of COVID to a large degree.
Right. Like, I can't help but think that the Chipotle on Sixth Avenue would suffer if, like, our company went completely work from home in New York as well. So moving kind of into the right sizing discussion, which is where most of your work really lives. So let's talk about how these companies can most commonly approach righting the ship when it comes to restructuring. Like, obviously, one of the big ones that we've recently seen was the Red Lobster case, which had real estate implications. There were also, you know, operational things, and not the main reason, like some headlines said, but like the endless shrimp thing did matter. Let's start with footprint. Let's talk about like lease renegotiations and that kind of thing, how much that matters as we go forward.
Well, certainly. And I think what any establishment or group is going to do is look at on a store by store basis to figure out or identify underperforming locations. Almost all restaurant chains have some level of debt beyond their lease payments. And if you have locations that are cash flow negative, the best thing you can do is, if you don't see them coming back, if they're going to continue to be affected by the work from home or other things that impact these locations, is how do I get out from under, you know, certain stores? And so once you've identified those locations, there's one or two things you can do. You can hopefully try and renegotiate if you can lower your rent. And a lot of times these restaurants have a variable component of their lease payments. So some of it might be a base rent, and then part of it is tied to revenue or top line. So if there is a way to lower your rent number such that you can make that location perform at a higher rate, then that's great. Obviously, with like Red Lobster, you know, marquee brand for many decades, sometimes you have to do this through a bankruptcy so that you can reject certain leases and get out from under them altogether. And then hopefully what you are left with as far as your footprint coming out of a bankruptcy is a better performing group of locations. And by doing that, you know, you've gotten, again, out from anything that was a drain on your cash, and hopefully puts you in a stronger position going forward to continue to invest in the brand. We all have our favorites, and consumers obviously still love the experience of going into restaurants. So it's a way of not only making that experience what it has been historically in a good way, but how can you do it better going forward?
Right. So let's say that we have, let's put the advisor cap on for a second. And I'm wondering, when you have a chain of restaurants and you're wondering what to close and what to, let's say, rehab, you know, how do you evaluate which locations, you know, it's best to just get out from under them versus some where you look at them and you think, you know, like if circumstances change positively a little bit, this one can come back?
I think you have to look at the historical to figure out, why did you open that particular location to begin with? What was driving the need, you know, to put a restaurant in that particular office building or office park or standalone or in a mall? And look for the root problems. Is it because just foot traffic has fallen off? Is it because businesses have moved away from that particular area? So I think you need to really understand the operational fall off at each location, not just look at the numbers and say, oh, it's negative, but really understand why it's negative. And is this going to be something that we're never going to be able to turn around, or we're going to have to invest too much capital to carry this to a point in time where we see light at the end of the tunnel. So I think it's the operational assessment at each restaurant, as well as just understanding, you know, the numbers that are then the results of those operational challenges.
Makes total sense. Most of the stuff we've talked about so far is operator or business facing. So what kinds of consumer facing, customer facing solutions can these restaurants kind of pursue to sort of bring cash back in, bring people back into the tables?
Well, we can take a look at Red Lobster, for example. The plan there is not only have they closed several locations to shrink their footprint, but the customer is still looking for that great dining experience. They want to walk into a nice, clean, well-run operation. Nobody likes to walk in and have to wait. So how can they use technology or invest dollars now that they've gotten out from underperforming stores and invest that money that will enhance the dining experience for all of us, whether that is quicker time to not only get seated, to order your food, to get your food. And then there's also aspects of this using technology where they can remember what your typical buying customs are, so that when you walk back into the establishment the next time, there's data that they can say, oh, this is what this person ordered before. And it's a more personal touch. Obviously, the three big costs for operating restaurants are the food costs, the people, and your real estate. And if there is a way that you can bring that customer experience at a higher level and use technology as opposed to just hiring more people, it helps streamline the costs. The people still who are dining there still want that interaction and that smile on their face when you're placing the order, whether you're using tablets, you know, to input your order, so it's immediately going to the kitchen to start preparing your food. And I think that's where a lot of the investment dollars are probably going into, is that make the dining experience better for the customer.
And what kind of role do things like maybe offering promotions, or maybe milder promotion, maybe some milder sales than endless shrimp, or, you know, happy hours, or, you know, just things to try and get people back in the door, even if you don't reap the full profit?
Sure. And again, what you're trying to do is obviously get allegiance. You know, people like going to their favorite places, and anything you can do to thank them for being a loyal customer is always a positive thing. And especially as we talked about with the stress points in today's economy, the fact that a restaurant operator is acknowledging that, yes, people have less dollars to spend to come to the restaurant, by giving them a break to kind of share in that economic pain is certainly going to be received well by the customer, because they feel that they're cherished, they're acknowledged, that their business is important to the particular restaurant, and the operators are going to do whatever they can to hopefully support your dining experience and to make your dollars go further.
Right. Like, everybody wants a good experience, but nobody ever wants to feel like they're being squeezed.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's clearly you cannot just continue to pass along the increased cost to the customers. And that's obviously what has happened. You get to a point where people say, I'm not paying that much for that particular meal. I think we can all look at our own personal spend and look back and say, pre-pandemic, I spent X dollars for this particular meal that I would get on a regular basis. And then you look at that same meal today, and if it's 50, 75% higher, it gets to a point where it's difficult for people to justify that. So if there is a way, while the restaurants are trying to be more operating more efficiently from a cost perspective, but at the same time acknowledging the importance of the customer coming through the door, I think is very important.
Right. So we talked about the technology implementation, and we're kind of moving into a conversation about how these businesses can exit a restructuring or even a bankruptcy and insulate themselves going forward. What kind of like operational shifts do you think would benefit this industry going forward? What can they do kind of outside of the actual restaurants to give things a little bit more longevity?
Well, besides just investing in technology, I think that you're constantly reevaluating your headcount, whether it be at the management level or down at the restaurant level. And are there ways that we can purchase inventory in a more efficient way across our platform that could eliminate the need for certain job functions that otherwise were very costly? So I think that it's a constant studying of how do we best deliver the experience? And is that a combination of a person being involved. Obviously, that you're going to need to have employees up and down the management ladder. But at the same time, again, as you look at the efficiencies in a way that you can carve out some costs that perhaps you needed historically to operate, but without compromising the customer experience, but actually enhancing it.
Right. And some of that also goes into how we can see sometimes misfires when it comes to, let's say, like product initiatives, trying to acquire new customers, like deviating too much from the core experience. Like, how do you balance wanting to try new things to get new people in the door with not throwing out the expected experience out the door?
Well, I think that by gathering customer data, and we're all hit every single day, whether we're searching on the internet or buying things, and there's constant data being gathered about our spend and where our interests are. And I think that the more restaurants can figure out the things that are satisfying to their customer base and eliminate, you know, things that are less costly and maybe not as impactful, I think is important. I think what I've seen in over the years is oftentimes restaurant chains have tried to say more is better. They've expanded their menu. And now what you're starting to see is more of a retraction, which is, let's get back to the basics. Let's get back to what we did really, really well. And that's what used to bring the customers in. So I think that things are kind of going in a different direction. Instead of having a 5-page menu, it's a 2-page menu. And again, that also helps with your inventory control and your costs for purchasing food, and also prep and delivery of to the customer. So that's typically what I'm seeing right now.
Well, I think that's just about as good a summary as we can kind of come up with for this whole conversation, which is, you know, back to basics, just do what you do well and the customers will come, right? Hopefully, at least.
That's it. But I don't think we're certainly out of the woods yet as far as restaurant chains. I think you're going to continue to see more and more chains take advantage of, you know, realigning their footprint and figuring out a successful path forward. Again, now that the challenges, people know what the challenges are, it's a matter of how do we go about fixing them. And the best recommendation I always tell potential clients is, time is not always your ally. So sometimes it's better to bite the bullet sooner rather than later and just tear the Band-Aid off. Let's get this done and move on, as opposed to thinking that if I put this initiative in place, it's going to get us 6 months down the road and to a better place. And then the next thing you know, it's just things continue to deteriorate. So oftentimes it's, let's do it now while you've got some good runway. And that gives you more options for hopefully a brighter future.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, it's been a real pleasure talking today. Thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts and your expertise with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to our listeners, as always, for checking out this episode of Legal Lens. We'll see you next time.